Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Today, we'll be continuing with our ongoing series on alternative healing for women. This is a part of a series we're probably, I think, now at about number 5 or 6 in our series on women's health issues. All told, there'll probably be close to 20 programs because there's so many conditions that women, unfortunately, are not fully aware of what their options are. Now, if you choose to use an orthodox approach, that's fine. An alternative approach or a combination. The key is knowing as much about the issue as possible before you make any choice. And that's what this series is devoted to, giving you as many options as possible so that when you do make your choice, you're making it from some reasoned position. We're going to look on today's program at cervical dysplasia, fibroids, reproductive system cancers, diabetes, depression. Depending upon how much time we can use on all these, we'll get through those or not. And then in the next program, I'll continue on with these. Following this series on women's health issues, I'll be doing a series on men's health issues. Cervical dysplasia is an abnormal growth of cervical tissue caused by the sexually transmitted human papilloma virus. By the way, that's the same virus that is responsible for cervicitis, genital warts, and cervical cancer. Now, these conditions can be detected generally with a pap smear. Let's take a look at some of the causes that you may or may not be aware of. The likelihood of a woman contracting cervical dysplasia increases with intercourse at an early age, unprotected sex with several male partners, smoking, birth control pills, and a weakened immunity, including stress, all will put you in a position to be more susceptible. Women who have intercourse at an early age are more vulnerable to getting genital warts and cervical dysplasia because the cells of the cervix at that age are more susceptible to being infected by the virus. Now, smoking is one of the biggest factors in acquiring cervical dysplasia and cervical cancer. If you smoke and you're exposed to the virus, you're much more likely to develop dysplasia, and you're much more likely to develop cervical cancer from your dysplasia. And we know that nicotine actually lodges in the glands of the cells of the cervix. And when exposed to the virus, the DNA can change to take on more abnormal features. And if you have genital warts and you smoke, it's much more likely that you'll turn cancerous as well. So we have to appreciate why so many women now, looking back at the 40s and 50s when they were encouraged to smoke by their doctors and the medical community, as a way of supposedly calming their nerves, now end up having cervical cancer. And you have a whole new generation of teenagers who think that unprotected sex is cool, it's defined of society, it's hip. At the same time, smoking and using drugs are ways to show that they're disobedient to their parents and society. They've taken a strong, in-your-face attitude. Well, it's one thing to be defiant for a good reason, another thing to be self-destructive in being defiant. And that's exactly what's happening. We also know that oral contraceptives are known for creating a folic acid deficiency, and folic acid deficiency is associated with acquired cervical dysplasia and having the disease progress to cancer. Now, you would think, well, isn't it easy to get your folate? Yes, it is. But then again, people are not eating the dark green vegetables. Ask the average person, do you like dark green vegetables? Generally, the answer is no, unless they have spent a lifetime acquiring the taste for them. Generally, they feel that dark green vegetables are too bitter, and we have a society that enjoys sweet and soft, crunchy and salty. Well, that's neither when it comes to vegetables. They tend to go towards the bland or slightly bitter. If you ate broccoli or broccoli raw, it is a bitter. Asparagus, a bitter. Brussels sprouts, a bitter. Cauliflower, a bitter. And then, of course, when you get into the cress family, like watercress, and you also get into the mustard family, it's very bitter. Now, when you go to the Orient, the average vegetable eater here finds many of their root vegetables not only bitter, kind of an acrid taste. If you're not used to things like burdock root or fermented foods, like some of the soy paste they use, it can be nauseating. So it's every culture has a type of taste that it prefers, and ours just isn't high up on the scale of vegetables. Hence, we don't get our folic acid. Let's talk about cervical dysplasia as a progressive syndrome that develops over time. After initial exposure to the virus, there's no indication that anything has changed. Later, immune changes may occur. Warty tissue may develop, then mild dysplasia, moderate dysplasia, severe dysplasia, carcinoma in situ, and then invasive cancer. Now, these symptoms are not evident upon physical examination. So when your doctor tells you that you're fine, there's nothing wrong with you, you're just as healthy as can be, the doctor's making that based upon an assumption of a lack of gross or overt symptoms. But the lack of an overt symptom is no indication that you have no disease. Now, this is just one example in women in particular where you could be long advanced in your disease state before the very first symptom even appears. So when the doctor says, well, we're lucky we got it early, no, they got it at the end stage of the healing crisis, not the beginning. And hence the reason for prevention. Yet we're not a society that really likes to prevent anything. We don't watch our money closely enough. We're the average American, by the way, is for the first time in this century, we're at a negative savings. We're about a 3% negative savings. That does not even take into account mortgage costs that we're paying and the total cost of that mortgage. And when you look at our credit card, the average American expending $8,000 debt on credit card, some $68,000 on mortgage, and then we have a 3% negative savings. Quite simply, we're buying too much. We're over-consuming. And we're buying things that we really don't need. So when a crisis does come along, we panic, and so many of our choices are made from our insecurity. And yet, just as we're insecure because we don't have a backup, we end up not planning the future properly. Well, we do the same thing with our health. Ask the average person waking up today. Are you going to eat a breakfast based upon what your tissue needs, your immune system needs, to feed your heart, to feed your lymphatic system, to feed your spleen? They're going to look at you like you had four heads. No, they're going to get up and have what they've always had because it tastes good and they're used to it. And it's convenient and it doesn't cause them any stress. So if you sat there and they had a cup of coffee with sugar, or they had some bacon or a lox and bagel or a donut and a cola, and if you said, what is that doing in your body? Again, they're going to look at you like, what are you talking about? It's okay. It's one of the basic four food groups. Flour, sugar, meat. And you're going to say, well, it may be one of the basic four food groups, but the basic four food groups is the primary cause of disease in our society. They're going to say, not possible, or the experts or doctors wouldn't have encouraged us to eat this stuff. You're going to say, well, is your doctor or scientist any wiser about what should go into your body than you are? And of course, the answer is no, they're not. But I'll tell you who is wise. The cola industry, soft drink industry, meat industry, dairy industry, and the bread industry. These are all billion-dollar, $100 billion industries cumulatively. And they need you to believe that you need this stuff. But when someone gets up in the morning and says, all right, what do I need today to really stay younger, prevent myself from aging, prevent cancer from being started or expanded? I need phytochemicals. I need enzymes, antioxidants. Then you look for the best sources of those and you put them in to your system in a health shake or a juice or a hot cereal. But that person is a rarity in our society. As a percentage of the general population, it's only about 2%. Another way of looking at it is 98% of the Americans every day wake up and work on creating disease. So when they get the disease, there's suddenly this surprise and depression about, why me? Well, why not you? you've worked very hard on not paying attention to the basics. And I want to tell you something. If you acted so irresponsibly, so stupidly, in any other part of your life that you do when it comes to your health and nutrition, you'd have been fired or bankrupt from any job you'd ever held. But when it comes to our health, we suddenly suspend logic, reasoning, discipline, and self-care, interest, or perspective. It just goes out the window. As a result, we end up with cervical dysplasia, fibroids, and reproductive system cancers. Now, since the human papillomavirus is sexually transmitted, the condition associated with it is preventable. Cervical dysplasia and genital warts and cervical cancers are all sexually transmitted diseases that should make an impression on all of us because it really dictates how we should protect ourselves. Obviously, we shouldn't smoke. We should protect ourselves by having safe sex and a healthy immune system. And if you do take birth control pills, you better take folic acid, about 800 micrograms daily. Those are the main ways to protect against cervical dysplasia and genital warts. I would also suggest 5,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C and at least 25,000, but you may go higher on beta carotene. That's also crucial. Now, before treatments, it's essential to get fully diagnosed to determine the stage of the illness. If a woman has an abnormal pap smear, her partner needs to be examined by a urologist for warty tissue. Otherwise, they'll pass the virus back and forth, reinfecting each other. So diagnosis by a licensed, well-trained alternative practitioner will determine whether a woman is a candidate for natural treatments only or needs to integrate these approaches with conventional methods. Now, conventional method usually does nothing to treat mild dysplasias and genital warts. Basically, they simply wait to see if it gets worse. Well, of course it's going to get worse. The body often can reverse mildly abnormal states to normal on its own if the immune system is really strong. If the immune system's not strong, you're not going to get any better. In the latter stages, aggressive measures must be taken. The preferred conventional treatment is known as LEEP, L-E-E-P, loop excisional electrosurgical procedure, which uses an electrical wire to cut out abnormal tissue. This is less expensive and less traumatic than the method of treatment previously used, called cone biopsy or conization. In advanced disease states, the hysterectomy has been used to save women's lives. But let's look at the natural treatments. Women with cervical dysplasia often have excellent results using naturopathic approaches. In the results of a research study that was conducted at the College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, 43 women with varying degrees of cervical dysplasia were treated. Now, 38 of the 43 reverted to normal. Three partially improved and two had no change, meaning they didn't get any better, but they didn't get any worse. Now, as far as my research of the scientific literature, I have not seen any conventional therapy have such a high degree of success. So it's not a matter of does it work. Yes, it does. And this is certainly evidence that it works. Now, there's three approaches to this protocol: systemic, local, and constitutional treatments. And women who follow the protocol for 3 months generally see remarkable improvements. And then you can re-examine with pap smear. Now, occasionally a biopsy may be needed. Let's take a look at the systemic treatment. Now, the systemic treatment is beta carotene, 150,000 units daily, vitamin C, 10,000 milligrams in divided doses daily, folic acid, 2.5 to 10 milligrams daily. Note, high doses of folic acid must be prescribed by a naturopathic physician, and after 3 months, the amount of folic acid is decreased. Then the local treatment would be vitamin A suppositories and herbal suppositories, and the constitutional treatment is really radical dietary change. You've got to get on an immune-enhancing diet, low fat, no animal proteins, lots of vegetables, lots of juices, fresh made, and no coffee, sugar, alcohol, dairy, animal fats, meat, or chicken. You must use condoms and no smoking. Now, the herbal treatment is another approach as well, and this is where you use herbal infusions to treat cervical dysplasia. And I'll give you a few suggestions here. You can make a tea using herbs steeped in water. Take 1 teaspoon in water or herbal tea 3 times a day for 2 to 4 months. Now, you can also use herbal douches. And the favorite douche would be use 1 ounce of wheatgrass juice for every 6 ounces of sterile water. And if wheatgrass juice is not available, then you can douche with 1 ounce of marshmallow root, 4 ounces of periwinkle leaf, 1 ounce of golden seal root, 1 ounce of gotukola, that's G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A, herb. You grind the herbs and mix with 4 ounces of boiling water. Let it boil for about 5 minutes and you let it steep and you strain it. You have to let it cool to room temperature before using it. Then you have 1 cup of warm water, but not hot. 15 drops of jujia essential oil, that's T-H-U-G-A, 1 ounce of calendula oil, 15 drops of vitamin E. You can also add 4 to 6 drops of blue chamomile essential oil and 4 to 6 drops of germanium essential oil. And you dilute the oils and water and mix it together. That's a separate one. Now, there's also the immuno-augmentative therapy. I've seen this work also. Now, treating cervical cancer by restoring the patient's own immune system has been done with, used to be Dr. Lawrence Burton, but when he died, Dr. John Clements took over, and he's at the Immunology Research Center in Freeport, Grand Bahamas. Now, let's take a look at fibroids and uterine bleeding. Fibroids are growths composed of muscle tissue that are usually benign. They attach themselves to the inner and outer walls of the uterus. 1 in 5 women over 35 has them. The majority of these women are African American. These tumors grow in response to estrogen levels. Now, medically, they're also referred to as fibromyoma uteri and leiomyoma uteri. The complementary physicians will take a look and say that fibroids are nature's way of encapsulating toxins that result from an unhealthy diet lifestyle. Most of the patients with this condition consume an awful lot of coffee. That's a very important factor because I know a lot of people who are vegetarian, who are in the health movement, who listen to this radio program, and they drink coffee. That is simply unacceptable. Most of the patients with this condition are consuming anywhere from 1 to 3 cups of coffee a day. And as far as I'm concerned, this is something that every person concerned about their health must stop drinking. Diet sodas, greasy French fries, pizzas, potato chips, donuts, and danishes, and other devitalized foods add to the problem. So you've got coffee, which is a real negative, and then everything else simply is complementary to that negative. You can also look at it from an Asian medicine point of view that sees fibroids as the result of blockage to the uterine area. This can be caused by anger, emotional upset, or a history of problems with menstruation, where it is either late or prolonged. And sometimes after an abortion, the endometrial wall will still have some cells from that particular pregnancy. And further down the line, that can develop into fibroids. Now, small fibroids are symptomless, but they grow, and when they do, they result in painful periods and bladder infections and infertility. And uterine bleeding is another common symptom. If the fibroid is located on the inside of the uterus lining, then you'll have this uterine bleeding, which usually sends women to a gynecologist where she opts for hysterectomy. I would not do that. If the fibroid is located on the muscle wall, there's not much bleeding, but the fibroid will continue to grow. The bleeding is the body's attempt to restore balance. Circulation and oxygenation of the uterus and the muscles and the blood vessels are diminished, and the metabolic waste products begin to build up. So bleeding is a sign of a highly toxic condition attempting to correct itself. Now, again, the traditional orthodox method is small fibroids that do not cause problems are sometimes removed by a procedure known as a myomectomy. Now, this procedure removes the fibroid only and does not interfere with a woman's ability to have children. For larger tumors or fibroids that cause heavy bleeding, hysterectomies are the standard treatment. It was about, I guess, a year ago, I had a Dr. Herbert Goldfarb, a gynecologist and assistant clinical professor at New York University School of Medicine, on my program. And he reports that the vast majority, upwards of 95% of all hysterectomies every year are unnecessary and dangerous. Now, to give you an idea how many women are undergoing this, 750,000 hysterectomies were performed last year. 2,500 women died during the operation. So we're not sick women, but healthy women who go into the hospital and don't come out. Surgical procedures have death as a consequence, which means complications arose from morbidity, and all of that should have been prevented. In addition, hysterectomy can be psychologically destructive. Some women want the operation and are all right about it, but most women feel like lambs being led to the slaughter. They really don't want to have this procedure done, but their physician gives them no alternative. A new laser procedure called the myoma coagulation has the potential to end the use of hysterectomy for fibroids once and for all, but most people don't know about it. If you read the book, The No Hysterectomy Option, written by Dr. Goldfarb, it does give you a lot of the understanding of what your options are. Now, sometimes, in rare circumstances, women do need hysterectomies, but often they're told they need them for frivolous reasons. And this way, you should be aware. It is simply a reality that 50% of all patients having hysterectomies could have avoided them. And that means that a lot of people are being mutilated and killed who don't have to. One of the alternatives to hysterectomy is a hysteroscopic surgery, which is used when a fibroid is protruding into the uterus. The surgeon inserts a hyperscope, which is a tubular instrument that allows the surgeon to visualize the interior of the uterus, through the cervix, and shaves away the fibroid with instruments passed through the hyperscope and the hysteroscope. The hysteroscope is also used to shrink larger fibroids with lasers or electric currents. An alternative for relatively small fibroids on the outside of the uterus is a laparoscopic surgery. And the laparoscopic is an instrument used to visualize the interior of the abdomen. It's inserted through an incision in the abdomen, and the fibroid is vaporized by an electric current or removed surgically using instruments passed through the tube. I met not long ago Dr. Vicki Hufnagel when I was in Los Angeles lecturing, and she was talking about how she had used a technique of female reconstructive surgery successfully to remove uterine fibroids regardless of the size or number of tumors, limiting both blood loss and surgical complications. Unfortunately, it's not being widely used. Now, I mentioned a few moments ago myoma coagulation. Let me talk a little bit about that, because I believe it could enable your physician to successfully prevent hysterectomies in hundreds of the women that they see with fibroids and uterine bleeding. And approximately 5 years ago, on a trip to Europe, Dr. Goldfarb observed a technique where a fibroid was being pierced with a special type of laser, which destroyed the fibroid tissue and subsequently shrunk the tumor. When he returned to the United States, he performed the first myoma coagulation. Other physicians call it myolysis. And a young woman with a fibroid tumor was undergoing a tubal sterilization. He pierced the fibroid with a laser fiber, and lo and behold, the fibroid disappeared. 5 years later, this woman is functioning perfectly well, the fibroid is gone, and she has absolutely no symptoms. Subsequent to that, he performed this technique in well over 300 patients, and a number of his colleagues also performed the procedure. So, it is out there. The typical candidate for this procedure is a woman uninterested in reproduction, since the uterine wall may become too weak to support a pregnancy, and also the size of the tumor must be 10 centimeters or less, approximately 6 inches. If the fibroid exceeds this size, it can be reduced with the medication Lupron. Lupron reduces estrogen levels in the body and temporarily reduces the size of the fibroids. With Lupron, you get about a 50% reduction in size. Now, once a tumor has become smaller, coagulation can be performed, which shrinks it another 50 to 75% and puts an end to the problem. When that procedure is done, you literally undermine the tumor by destroying its blood supply. As the doctor puts needles around the fibroid, it turns blue, showing that the blood supply has been interrupted. And fluid and blood go out, and the tumor shrinks. It becomes stringy tissue and just sits there, becoming very small, eliminating the need for removal. But the patient has no symptoms and go about their life without the need for further surgery. And the cost of myopia coagulation is equal to that of other operations, but this treatment is cost-effective in the long run. The good news is that patients come into the hospital in the morning, have the procedure done, and go home in the afternoon. This saves the insurance company significant amounts of money, and also these patients go home to work within a week so that their very life cost, the cost within their life is minimal because they're not suffering great disability. But there's more. That's kind of an orthodox approach that is less destructive to the woman. But there's more natural approaches as well. Fibroids grow in response to estrogen. So the natural lowering of estrogen through diet and exercise has a first-line defense against fibroid growth. Research shows that over fatty diet increases the estrogen substantially in the body. And we know overweight women produce more estrogen. So the first approach would be dietary. And by the way, overweight women also have more fibroids. The best diet for a woman attempting to decrease the size of her fibroids, or at the very least keep them from getting any larger, consists of whole foods, live foods, and a vegetarian diet. The best protein sources are from vegetables and also whole grains like millet, amaranth, quinoa, buckwheat, whole oat grain oats, brown rice. And by the way, there's at least 20 variety of rice alone. Jasmine rice and basmati rice and wild rice combinations. So there's no shortage of interest aesthetically in your culinary delights. I mean, you could take one type of rice and make 100 different types of dishes with it. And rice is a complete protein. Now, when you add in something like a bean to the rice, you increase the quality, the usableness of the protein. So you're getting the best of two worlds. You're getting a complete protein, and you're also getting something the body can thrive on. Cultures all over the world have thrived on this kind of approach. And one other thing, though, I'm not going to talk about it today. All of the research I have seen and even conducted at the Institute of Applied Biology shows that the one single factor that will allow you to live a longer life, no matter what else happens, is calorie restriction. We are simply overfed and undernourished. We're eating too many devitalized foods that give us calories, but give us almost nothing else except calories. Now, when you look at what the average teenager is eating, the average adult's eating, we're just not getting the grains, the beans, the nuts and seeds. And yes, nuts and seeds, walnuts, almonds, pistachios, Brazil nuts, filberts, these contain all of the 8 essential amino acids necessary to create the building blocks of our cells, the protein. We've been led to believe that only animal proteins do this, like dairy and meat and chicken. Not true. In fact, in a project that was called the Egg Project at the Institute of Applied Biology, Dr. Hillard Fitzke, my brother Stephen, and myself did a study. And this study was the first of its kind anywhere in the world. But it took 14 years to get it published. Was there a flaw in it, in design, execution, or results? No. No, we repeated it so many times it was flawless. What the problem was that it showed that we did not need any animal proteins whatsoever to develop strong muscles, a strong immune system, and to live a healthy life. Now, you could imagine with the amount of advertising dollars that go to the American Dietetic Journals, where I submitted the article, the influence at the USDA and FDA, where I submitted the article, the bias that is held in the academic mind and an intellect without context, MIT, I submitted the article, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, where I submitted the article, they wouldn't even return a response on it. And yet, think of the implication. We could save ourselves the diseases that are known to be associated with meat and animal consumption. About 500,000 deaths a year saved. Over $100 billion in food purchases saved. And that's just the cost. Think of the amount of disease. It's been estimated the cost of diseases due to our lifestyle would be close to $500 billion a year. So when you look at the consequences of rejecting this study, it was substantial. And again, no one had ever done this work before. So here we had the actual hard science that a cup of beans and a cup of rice and some seaweed gave you more quality protein than a steak or any animal protein. In fact, it was called the Egg Project because three different combinations put together in equal sizes to that of an egg actually exceeded the net protein utilization, meaning net is how much of the actual protein was utilized from a given source. Well, up to that point, the egg had been considered by all scientific standards in every medical and dietary text to be the ultimate source of usable protein. I had three separate combinations that exceeded the egg, hence establishing a new precedent. Did it make news? None. Finally, after 2 years of frustration of having no one return correspondence, no medical journal, they wouldn't even give me a reason why they wouldn't publish the article. I held a press conference with my audience in New York. About close to 800 people attended. I gave them the information, and I gave them charts where they could have 5,000 combinations that had greater protein quality than any animal protein. Now, there were no dietitians, no physicians, unfortunately, who came. Because, again, the bias. What they didn't want to hear and weren't present for, they wouldn't know. And because they didn't know, they could then say, there's no evidence. But we were there. That went on to become the basis of literally all of my writings on nutrition since then, was that you could completely justify a vegetarian diet on the grounds of good science. And the book was published by Seven Stories Press that laid out all the details on it. Later, 14 years later, a major peer-reviewed journal finally published the article, when it was no longer offensive to anyone, I guess, or threatening. And even then, it didn't cause any reaction. No one from the media, no one from the dietetic community, no one from anyone called to say, hey, this was a major revolutionary study. This is like the discovery of vitamin C, but more important. Why would it be more important? Because we've been shipping off to Africa our milk that had been in storage out in Utah. We subsidize the dairy industry about $500 million a year when they produce more dairy than what we can consume retail. The government, meaning the taxpayers, buy up all this extra dairy and store it. Then we ship it off to Africa. Now, there are three problems with this. First, why should we be subsidizing an industry, in effect, to create a product that we don't need? Secondly, they're using bovine growth hormone to get even more milk. But that's only to benefit Monsanto, the people that sell the hormone. It doesn't benefit the dairy farmer. And it sure as the dickens doesn't benefit the American public because of all the suspected realities of the bovine contaminated milk, which is not labeled as such. Next, most of the people in Africa are genetically predisposed not to be able to use lactose and have allergic reactions to the protein in milk. So let's say that you have a woman in sub-Sahara Africa who is starving. and we send her milk. So she gets this can of powdered milk, and she adds it to some water, and she drinks it. Now she gets diarrhea, and her body creates an allergic reaction. When she breastfeeds, the antigen allergic response can go into her baby. Her baby then can develop diarrhea and die of dehydration. And it happens. So we are actually contributing to premature death in cultures that shouldn't have to die because of our misguided policies and a lack of innate wisdom within the agencies that should be doing something other than just this mindless bureaucracy of creating rules and regulations and following without looking at the consequences, which seems to be something bureaucrats don't do, look at the consequences. But for those of us who actually are in the field and look at this, it's appalling. Almost nothing we do ever works. I mean, it's you'd think surely someone will pay attention. And then the answer is no one's paying attention. As long as they're doing what they're told to do and following their policy, why should they? There's a reward for compliance. There's punishment for disobedience. No one's going to threaten their own reward system with standing out. So, with rare exception, we go along with things like feeding them milk products in Africa. Big mistake. Creating surpluses in America. Big mistake. Feeding dairy to our kids. Mistake. Having stupid, really stupid advertising programs with inherently mindless, numbifying celebrities, including African Americans, Spike Lee and some of the others who had the milk mustaches. My God, when you get successful, do you suddenly lose your capacity to reason?